This is Mark Gleason of the Evangelism Communications Committee, and we are conducting an oral history project of St. John's members. And today we have with us on March 24th, Jean and Lois Bacco, longtime members of the church. Welcome, Jean and Lois, and let's start with some of your history.
Well, we moved here in 1972, and we both grew up in Lutheran Church, and married in Lois's Lutheran Church and a little country church. But so when we came to town, we obviously looked for a church. St. John's probably what we picked for probably the primary reason, and maybe a secondary one would be there too. But we lived just two blocks from here. The very first house we ever owned. I was out of grad school, and we realized that there were a number of St. Olaf people here, and I was associated with college, and so it just seemed like a natural fit. And we enjoyed walking to church and things like that. We don't live in that house anymore, and we now drive to church because we're out in the country. Although interestingly enough, we lived out on Highway 19, a little sort of a cul-de-sac with about seven houses. And when we moved there, every single house in that cul-de-sac went to St. John's. It was a little sort of mini St. Olaf community. But people like Cully Swanson and Nelson Thora Quam, parents to John Quam. Arnold and Evelyn Flotten next door to us, Judy and Jim Ennisvet, Orin and Adele Loftus.
Quams. John's Quams parents.
And George and Ardella Moberg right across the road, and all St. John's members, yeah. And so we've had a strong interaction with St. John's people and the church since then.
What towns are you from in Minnesota?
Northern Minnesota. I grew up on a farm near Barnesville, Fargo Moorhead area.
And
so I went to a country church, and the pastor we had in that country church served us for over 50 years. Back in those days, they didn't move them on. He had, five congregations and wonderful minister. So he baptized and married and confirmed my parents, plus my siblings. So that was neat.
I had a chance to meet him before he passed on, when we were first dating and things like that. Yeah. But he wasn't there for our marriage, but he was quite a guy. And in fact, there's a story about him hosting the St. Olaf Choir up in the Holly or Moorhead area. And the word came back what a wonderful man that he was, and so forth.
Well, his son, S.G. Haugen was his name, and his son was Gabriel Haugen.
Who was a right-hand advisor to President Eisenhower.
So for
Are you from the same town?
Moorhead. I'm from Moorhead, yeah. We both went to Moorhead State, not Concordia, and met there and went on to grad school and then ended up here then in 1972. Yeah. Children grew up here through the church. Lois taught. Well, you're involved in way more than
The children were growing up involved in teaching Sunday school and vacation Bible school and, working with the Advent Fair every December. Our children really looked forward to that.
Well, tell us about who your children are and where they are now.
Brett, Emily is our oldest, and she actually moved back to Northfield with her husband, and now we have a granddaughter, Elsa. Right in town in Northfield. So that's been fun for us. And our son and his wife and two children live up in St. Paul.
And they have two children, so we have three grandchildren. They're all close by, and we enjoy that a lot, yeah. Lois is heavily involved in many things, sort of behind the scenes, we may be both in that way. I've been on a couple of boards. Lois has been on boards, a nominating committee, various things like that. One thing it's been interesting to see and enjoyed the church move along with society as being a scientist, a biologist, and just the reference of time is something that a lot of people have to adjust to in terms of what their early thoughts are. And just earlier this year, Pastor Pam had asked me, Jim Cederberg, David Nitz, and the scientists at St. Olaf, talk to parents of confirmants about the sense of time and evolution and things like that. So it's been an easy church as a scientist to grow up in and or to be in over the time we've been here, and pleased to see that go along like that.
Could you reflect on the role of science in the church over the years as you have seen that evolution?
Yeah, it's something. What I went through those kind of gyrations in your mind from the Earth being 6,000 years old to it's considerably older than that, and the Big Bang Theory and all of that when I was in college, and then on to graduate school. And quite honestly, I was a little concerned or wondered. I was very interested in the job at St. Olaf. In fact, I turned down another job at a large university to come here because I liked the nature of the smaller school, the liberal arts, and all the potential that could be involved with teaching. But I did wonder about, if people, students particularly, come to school with their pat ideas of time, and early on that probably was the case to some degree. But when I came and interviewed for the job, which was 1972, right in the heart of the Vietnam War debate, President Nixon coming under more and more fire before he quit. And I saw the word strike spray painted on the halls of the walls of St. Olaf limestone buildings, and that resonated with me. Not that I was never a protester of that kind of a personality, but I was glad to see that the college here was caught in the times and were dealing with those issues, and actually went on and handled it all very well, I think. And it's so between the college, which is church related, and St. John's, of course, I've been very comfortable with all of that. Yeah.
Lois, can you tell me about some of the boards that you have been on and your education experience also?
I was on the Paris Fellowship Board. That was the last board that I was on. That was a few years ago. And I think I was also on an education board, so just a couple times. And then, as I said, I helped out with teaching Sunday school, vacation Bible schools every Christmas, which I'm still glad to see they do the Advent fair that they have continued with our children. Still remember those fondly. And when I was helping with it, the rooms upstairs here where we are the rooms that were used for the Advent fair, and each room would have a particular craft going on. Now I think they do them all in the St. John's Hall. So those are things, and that's one thing I'm glad St. John's has done, is they've kept up some of these traditions that I think were meaningful to the church and to the children. Our children, like I said, still remember them, so it had some kind of impact on them.
Has worship changed very much during your time at St. John's?
Like in what way?
In format and the actual liturgy?
Not really that I remember. In fact, not too long ago, our son was humming one of the, you know, liturgy that, you know, he remembered as a kid, and we still do it. So I don't think it has changed that much. Communion wasn't every Sunday back when we first joined here, and it probably wasn't in general in Lutheran churches. When I grew up, communion was only on Christmas and Easter.
Certainly there were some changes in the liturgy, going from the green hymnal to the red one, and we've sort of modernized the Lord's Prayer within our lifetime, and so there have been more subtle in that respect. Maybe the biggest thing I would say is that we have always enjoyed the quality and level of preaching here from pastors, but it has become more relevant and more open to what's going on in society and related to that, and I think that's been a big improvement, and that's probably natural in many churches, but we've heard it, certainly appreciated the people here, how they do it from Pastor Gulf was when we first came, and Jacobson, and then starting with Les Svensson and
Joseph Crippen
and now Pam has been a nice progression of the quality of and the information and the stimulation, I think, to think about things has been good. Assistant pastors as well, our associate pastors, such as Jonathan right now, excellent people, yeah.
Plus, of course, the music at St. John's. St. John's is probably known for their music, but it is wonderful. I remember my mom and dad coming to church with us one Sunday, and my dad commenting afterwards, he said, "You must have some wonderful singers in your church," because he noticed just in the hymn singing how full and rich the singing was. So that was interesting. And my dad was kind of musical. My grandfather played the organ way, way back in our church. So there's music in our family. So it was I guess appropriate that he would have noticed that, but it was interesting that he commented on the music. And that is something that I think over the years we really have enjoyed, is all the wonderful, not just the congregation singing, but the choirs and the talent of the people at St. John's, the musical instrument talent and the singing. It's wonderful.
Yeah, from the horns to the wind instruments to the bell ringers. I mean, I just every time there's a performance by one of those groups or persons, it just adds a really, really good dimension to the whole service, I think.
Had you ever hoped for a more contemporary service, or do you like the traditions that the church has in place?
I guess I'm a contemporary is fine. I don't think I'd like a contemporary service every Sunday. I guess I'm more traditional. In fact, the church that we visited in Arizona, they clap.
There'd be applause.
You know, there's applause.
Frequently.
Something. And that's fine. I don't want to say, oh, that's not what they should do. But it just didn't seem quite fitting, so I guess maybe I am traditional.
But by the same token, as I said earlier, appreciated is the modernization of the thinking process here, and that needs to continue.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I want it to stay like it always has. I think that's good, but if you're asking me contemporary to traditional, I'd say I was more traditional.
Has change happened in ways that you think are planned, or does change happen more as an informal process at St. John's?
I've long felt, or the dilemma or argument or thought process I have in my mind is, do the church leaders influence the congregation, or is it the leaders that change and they bring the congregation along with them, or is it the congregation that changes and the leaders then have to adapt to that? And I think there's a balance between both of those, and obviously the greater part of society is involved in this, and the congregation is part of that society, and that it works from both ends in a way. And our leadership here has gone along very well with the times. Now, and I think one thing you have to give credit to are the search committees that go out and find these leaders for us. And that's, you know, that's a huge undertaking that is behind the scenes that people don't see, but it's been very important.
Yeah, St. John's has, you know, and I'd agree with you, I think it's been a good balance of the leaders in the congregation. St. John's has a lot of forward-thinking people that are willing to step up. I think St. John's also has a lot of behind-the-scenes, hardworking people. I can think of several over the years, women that I worked with in, you know, the funeral groups or service groups that I was involved with, that you could just always count on them, but they weren't the people that probably popped into everybody's mind when you talked about St. John's Church and what was going on.
Well, from your time from Barnesville forward, you must have seen a lot of change in the role of women in the church.
Yes, more, you know, as far as president of the congregation, this type of thing, that certainly women have stepped up in their role. And pastor, it's wonderful, I think, to have a woman pastor at St. John's. We really enjoyed Pastor Bam.
I mean, yeah, just yeah, ushering, you know, things like that was always a male duty, you know.
When I was growing up, when you went way back to Rolla Church, where I went, I don't remember that women...
mainly involved
in they were the women kitchen. In the kitchen, you know, serving at the funerals. And so, yeah, it's changed. That's good.
Do you have any thoughts about how the church will change in the future?
Well...
Or what your hopes are for the identity of the church in the future?
That's something I think about and ponder. I certainly don't have an answer for it. I think there's a bit of a dilemma right now, maybe more than a bit, people. And when I say the church, I don't mean St. John's, but the church in general, Catholicism, Protestants. I mean, the whole aspect of religion is more and more people look at it as organized religion, and the belief system. The beliefs that people have, I mean, by definition, by the church's definition of belief, to believe is to think something is for which there is no proof. And it's easy for people to look at the church in a hypocritical way, and the church is going to have to weather that. And how they'll keep that is, I mean, it's a community that addresses facets of life that are very important and binds and brings people together, the openness of people of one denomination to people of other denominations, I think, is improving. Although there's still a lot of animosity that goes on in that way, but from the people that we interact with. Some of our best friends are Catholic, and I remember as a boy growing up, there was a Catholic school in town, and you wondered what, you know, it was just, there was a much bigger difference back then. And
right now, too, I think in general, don't they say the church membership is declining? Younger people are not automatically going to church like they used to. And so that's something the church needs to, you know, think about for the future.
Let me tee up one final question, and because I think both of you have reflected upon this, and that is the relationship of the church and St. John's to the environment.
Yeah, to me that's incredibly important. It's and that has come a long way too, and it really has. It can definitely go a lot further.
Are you talking about, like, in one instance, just things like, I remember when St. John first came out with the program, every Sunday we, you know, there were the handouts. When I was growing up, we had the hymnal and that was it. You know, of course that was a long time ago. But now, just if you're thinking of things like paper, you know, all the paper that gets used every Sunday for, you know, the programs that we get, you know, is there some way these could be reused, or, you know, it's nice to have, but those are all environmental issues. At least we do use the glass dishes that, you know, can be washed instead of paper things that are thrown. I don't know if this kind of thing here, the thing you're talking about when you're talking about environmental impact, but
all of those are important. And right now I'm on the grounds and properties and grounds board, and just one thing this is my first year, and so I've only been to a couple of meetings, but already we've talked about having possible compost, adding more to that and using things that are more compostable. But then there's the big picture, like climate change and how the leadership of the church deals with that. I have no question that Pam and Jonathan are very in tune with that. But their challenge is to lead the congregation more in that direction without turning them off, or, you know, that sort of thing. The church potentially can play a really big role in that respect, and hopefully it will.
Well, Lois and Jean, thank you for participating in this interview, and I'm sure you'll have many other things that you'll be thinking of that you wished you said.
we shouldn't have said.
Bring this one to a conclusion. Thank you.